It was a warm August morning like this one. The old professor woke from his slumber about 4:30 a.m. It'd be hours before the sun would touch his weathered face. As he made his way to the dojo to teach people how to kill. How's it going over there, Pat?
Oh, buddy, I am falling apart.
Are you?
All just right at, like, I felt really ready.
Right now is go time. You were excited about being ready for this next episode of the 6 a.m. podcast.
That's exactly right, but
episode
guess what?
Episode 5. What happened?
None,
you're not ready. You look like, I mean, everything's falling apart, starting with your pen.
Yeah, my pen bled all over my tie-dye shirt, which isn't really going to be a big issue through, you know.
Right.
I put it in the wash, it's just going to look a little prettier.
Yeah, I agree with you. Maybe it did you a favor.
But then after that, then all the technical malfunctions and trying to get all the timing right, like, and everything synced up.
It was like a 3-2-1 and push a button at the same time. It was like we're...
it's like a bomb squad here.
I know, it's exactly right. I was afraid that if I missed it, I'd ruin the whole freaking show.
But you did. And guess what?
What?
You did.
I did ruin it, or... But I didn't ruin it.
Well, we're going to find out in 14 beers.
Okay, in 14 beers, I've got Kyle Cooler with me here. It's a cooler I carry around with beer in it.
And
there's 15 of them in there. Well, 15 and a half.
I have a concern. First of all, I want to welcome you back.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Back to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'm in the Caddick. We're recording.
Live, back in person, back with
it.
You guys.
Yep.
While you were gone, right?
I knew this
went smoothly.
Coming. Yeah, I know, because Justin and Chris had it under control.
Of course.
Shout out to those guys. Thanks for holding down the fort.
Mostly Justin.
That's right, because Chris was out quite a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not really a concern as far as discipline or anybody acting up at the gym necessarily. It's a concern about a close friend, loyal listener, wonderful person, Luke.
Okay.
Okay?
You're worried about him.
I think he's on HGH.
Okay. Explain to me why you think he's on HGH.
Have you ever felt that guy?
Well, I've felt him.
He's like the thing, but like... He's like, you get lost in his eyes, and then, but I just grab him, and he's just solid.
Yeah.
I might be in love with Luke. Maybe that's it.
I think we're really getting to, like, the crux of this.
He laughed it off, and he said, come on, why would I be doing HGH? Why would Joe Rogan?
Why would Joe Rogan?
Right? Because you want to be an Adonis, and I feel like he's a titan of a man, and I don't know if it's all natural.
Are we saying that Joe Rogan and Luke are the same person?
They're cut from the same cloth, Jeff.
Indeed.
Yeah, and those two are absolutely... Hey, Stanley, what's going on here, buddy?
I mean, speaking of
bro,
problems...
What's going on here?
What's up with your cat, man?
I hired him for set design, and basically all he does is rub his face on stuff and knock it over.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
To do it right now.
Hey.
Here we go. Ready?
He likes to play with my pills. There you go. Go on, play with those now.
Go get him.
So he's definitely juicing.
Yeah. Okay.
So what should we do? I mean, I don't want to out him right here. We can bleep his name if you want. I mean.
Yeah.
What would you say if you found out if a student was juicing?
I'd say, where are you getting it from?
Hey, got any more?
I mean, is it clean? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel?
Is it good?
Yeah. Honestly, my first question, how's your dick? What's going on with your dick?
Yeah,
is that everything or
does it shrink? Is it shrinking?
Is that true?
Is that true? Okay. Or do your balls shrink?
Have you ever juiced?
No.
Really?
No, never.
I mean, are you saying that because you're on tape or?
No, I've never juiced.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, Jeff. Okay. All right.
Nope, I've never juiced. Never been on the juice.
Have you known anybody that's ever done it?
Yes.
What of the stereotypes? Did you know it before they told you?
No, not specifically.
Okay.
I mean, I would say that I wasn't surprised when they said it,
okay.
but I didn't, like, it wasn't something that was in part of my purview or my thoughts.
Luke gives no other real, like, you know, he's a very nice, even-tempered person, but he's just solid as a goddamn rock.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I went to...
Why? You're getting sweaty.
I can't help it. Hold on, let me cross my legs.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you going to ask me about it, though?
What would you do if you found out if a student or somebody, like legitimately, if somebody was taking, like, not a, you know what I mean? Like, nobody's really performing in class, right? But, like, a performance-enhancing thing.
I think that, you know, I think the reality of what we consider to performance-enhancing drugs is prevalent in every professional athletics, professional sport, with very few exceptions. And regardless of, like, what the commission on whatever said sport says that they do to crack down on, you know, said use.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's realistic.
Right.
I think the majority of athletes, especially after a certain age, have to use something in order to repair.
Right.
So, you know, the expectations that we put on our professional athletes as corporations, as society, and so forth is far too demanding to maintain.
It's an expectation that is, you're putting your expectations on them.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing of you're saying, like,
yeah,
we paid a ticket, so now you should, like, sacrifice your body, your fucking mind, and everything like that. So I guess really what the question is, Jeff, what do you plan on doing about Luke's juicing?
I'm not going to do anything about it.
You got the Luke juice.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep trying to choke him like I always do.
But, I mean, Jesus Christ. I told him that, and it made him laugh, and that was the only way that I had any success rolling with him.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You got to loosen him.
Yeah, you know, I think this goes, though, into, like, the into the territory of you know, self-defense.
Yeah.
And when you, like, when you go to out or whatever, if you're at a bar or a social event or whatever, and you find someone who's really scary, just go be friends with them and buy them a fucking beer.
Yeah, me and Luke are close.
Yeah, I mean, like, the best way to protect yourself in that environment is don't be a threat.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That was honestly through my high school career. I guess my high school experience was.
Yeah.
Basically, self-defense, deflection, and just try to be as funny as possible. Yeah. I was the crazy white guy.
Yeah.
But not the one that wore a trench coat, because they that was around the same time that
that's not
don't
bad.
Be that guy.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
I remember one time in biology, Mr. Benson, I think his name was. He was this guy from New Zealand. And he never had control of the class. This class was,
right.
Every stereotype, kids are shouting, throwing shit, like, hey, quiet down, quiet down, quiet down. Like, all this stuff. He's like, fine. Like, one time, like, it took him 15 minutes to get the class kind of settled. And there was one girl, she was mean, man. Tasha was her name.
Okay.
And she sat right behind me. And we eventually became friends. But at this time, we had not really spoken. I knew of Tasha.
You just knew of the anxiety that you felt sitting
like
in front
sitting
of her.
Right, like with like, could not keep eyes on her. Like, I was like, oh my god, she's gonna beat me up. And at some point, like, Tasha was the only one that was being in, like, loud. And Mr. Benson goes, Tasha, be quiet, please. And she goes like that and looks at him, and Jeff, I don't know where the fuck this came from, why I said it out loud. For everybody to hear.
Yeah.
But I just went, Tasha's the name of my dog. Like, I was Ralph fucking Wiggum or something. I just said it out. I didn't even turn around because, like, I definitely don't want to say it to her.
Yeah.
But the class went crazy and Tasha just punched me in the back. The teacher laughed. I was just like, one of those things. But then, like, all right, cool. Everything's cool. And actually, later on in that year, she ended up cornrowing my mohawk.
Oh, so, well, yeah, there you go.
It hurt like hell. But yeah, Tasha was really nice. Actually, that might, and now that I'm thinking about it, isn't that a prison thing where you braid someone's hair? And that if they're...
Again, man, this would come from... That would require me to know anything about being in prison.
Also, that gives you another view, a little insight into Pat George's childhood. I just compared my high school to prison.
Yeah.
But, Jeff, how was the rest of your trip out there in Florida, speaking of?
Well, I'll tell you, the rest of the trip was great.
Yeah.
I had a great time on the beaches of Cocoa Beach, mm-hmm. and surfing and spending time with my lovely bride and my children in the surf.
Wonderful.
I enjoyed very much the Kennedy Space Center.
Right? Isn't that cool?
As I'd mentioned on the last podcast, I wanted to be a fighter pilot at one point in my life. And so anything that have to do with aviation or, you know, space travel and so on and so forth is exciting to me.
Did you get those tingles? Like, did you get
I will say, like, there was a lot of, like, really cool, like, presentations and things that were, like, multimedia presentations that would, like, take place at the Kennedy Space Center. And my only criticism of it is that just as soon as it was ready to hit you in the feels, it would shift to something else. And I'd be like, oh. Like, yeah. I mean, I was like,
but what happens when they take flight?
Yeah, exactly.
They were just like, oh, I want to hear about the time that, yeah. the first time you were in air,
yeah.
in space, or right when you cracked the sound barrier, or the, what is it?
Which way are you going? Are you breaking out of the atmosphere?
I know. I went this way.
The stratosphere?
Yeah, this way, yeah. Whatever
if
this
you're
one
going,
is.
If you're going this way, yeah, we're talking sound barrier.
That one, yeah. Not this one, When I'm going this way.
When I'm going like this.
Yeah.
But that's the cool thing, is like that place can bring you, like, even though, like, it's great for kids, but it's also great for making,
yeah.
like, you remember, like, man, I remember being a kid.
There, I tell you, man, yeah. I'll tell you what, there's, I remember being a kid, and also, like, there were sections of this facility that were dedicated to, you know, the astronauts lost in the Challenger explosion and in shuttle in Columbia, mm-hmm. the shuttle Columbia, and it was very moving. And then in like part of this exhibit, between like the stories themselves and personal artifacts from all the astronauts that lost their lives. Interesting fact: my uncle Gary actually flew A-6 Intruders. Was a squadron mate with one of the guys that was the pilot of Challenger. So, at any rate, when you make your way through there, in the back, there's like just this quiet section where they have pieces of these shuttles that they recovered.
Oh, ooh, man, shit, that's crazy.
Shit's rough, man. Yeah. Like, yo. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't want to bring the whole podcast out, but yeah, it was amazing. It was a really, like...
How did your son fare? Like, did he, like, was it like, oh my God, I don't want to leave? Or was it like, that was awesome?
He was like, yeah, it was cool. Like, he was like, it was awesome. I think there were, you know, we had moments where, like, there was like, I don't ever want to leave this place. And then there was moments where we were like, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I mean, we capped the end of our vacation off by going to Disney World for 2 days.
Oh yeah. I forgot about Epcot.
We went to Epcot, and we went to Animal Kingdom. And my kids, like, Epcot was like, they were doing their wine and food festival. So, I mean, it would have been cool if it was just Melissa and I going around drinking and eating food. Would have been cool. The kids didn't quite get the same type of, like, kick out of it for the day. But Animal Kingdom, they fucking loved. Yeah. Man. They went bananas there. So.
Yeah. Do they do rides and stuff? Like, do you guys
They have rides. They have, like, experience rides, you know. They're not, like, real, like, roller coasters or anything like that, which is fine because I don't particularly like roller coasters.
I was going to say, yeah. Does any of your family do that?
They all of my whole family loves, like, they have season passes to Hershey Park and shit like that. They love roller coasters and, you know, all that jazz. And I'm just not, it's just not my jam.
I had one nightmare when I was a kid that was.
This is the one where it flies off the tracks, right?
No.
No,
it was just the climb.
It's just the climb?
No, it was just the climb, and I could see the parking lot, like, from the ride, like, in my dream, and it was the loss of control. It was the heights of it. It was all of that. All of that fear and anxiety was, like, it just cemented in me. Now, I mean, you give me a nice edible and a good old vape pen while I'm in the line, and I'll get it. I rode the Mummy, which is an indoor roller coaster.
Yeah.
Doesn't go upside down or anything like that, but to me, that was a huge win. Dom was little kid, just, you know, first day of school without crying proud.
Right,
you know what I mean? Like, she was like, that was so great. You did such a great job. And I was like, can I get a funnel cake? She said, you earned it.
You.
Yes, you can.
Who's a big boy?
And I was like, I'm a big boy?
Me? Is it me?
Did I do good?
Yeah, you did good.
Anything that goes, like, up or whips you around or anything.
Yeah.
Like, we just watched like a first person, like a POV of somebody writing, I think, the Hulk.
Okay.
Which is at Universal Studios.
Okay.
And I was like, no. Yeah. And you know what it is? It's the lulls. It's when they go, because that one just goes bam and just shoots out.
Right.
And I'm like, this and that. I'm like, I'd probably go, ah! But
right.
Like, I'd be okay.
Sure.
Because I can't really register anything.
It's
but
too
once
going
it
too
slows
quick.
Down like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like,
it's the anticipation.
Why am I stopped like this? I don't like this. Then I would start pooping myself.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then. Good luck to anybody behind me.
You know, my whole thing is, like, I'm just not my size is not built for a lot of these things. Yeah. And so when you get into them, like, it's just very clunky to me. It's not like a smooth experience. It jerks you around and like slams you into things. Your knees are smashing into everything. And I'm like, this is just uncomfortable. Like, it's not like,
this just hurts.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like,
I'm not having a good time.
Yeah. The only other thing I've done that's kind of like that reminds me of is like water slides.
Yeah.
I've done like the tube ones.
Oh, okay. You're not talking about one ass cheek getting stuck and the other one like dragging across.
No, like the ones where like you sit in the thing and it's like goes, but like Dom kind of does this thing where like she's like, it's fun to try to like flip it.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's not. So like I've like, but if you're really tense on a water slide, you're going down and you're like thunk, 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 like you're hitting your elbows every time it hits a thing.
Right.
There was one where I sat back at Adventure Island back in Florida, like not far from Busch Gardens and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some of the more go-to parks that we would go to. Like
amusement parks.
Yeah. More affordable even. But like,
no doubt.
You'd sit back and like when you, like no tube, you hit this one bump and like your head just goes, like why would you do that? They tell you to lay back like this.
Yeah.
So you do that and you're just like, like that. Like, and I don't know why they would just have a sudden drop like that, but to me, it doesn't feel like most amusement parks are worried about your best interest. They just worried about like shocking you,
right? Exactly.
In some way.
Sure,
so,
of course.
I don't dig that. I don't like haunted houses. I don't like most of that stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's not really my jam either. And then on top of that is the expense, the large crowds, like people. You know, it's just. You know, I get enough of sweaty people on top of me every day. I don't need to go do it for vacation.
You want to go in there and they're like, hey, by the way, with admission, you can get all this food and wine. And you're just like, this is the greatest amusement park I've ever been to.
Exactly. Right.
Hold on. And you have benches too?
There's seating?
I can sit down?
Win!
That's like,
win.
That's a huge adult win.
I did have to laugh, but I'm going to digress before we get to our point, is that hilarious, like go to Florida and have like everybody's super nice, blah 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 blah. We get to the airport to leave, and our flight is we're flying out of Sanford, Orlando, okay, smaller airport.
Yeah.
We finally know when we're with our Northeast people, because everybody, like, instead of, I noticed like the whole week I wasn't cursing, I was like being nice, I was being pleasant, and then I get there and like everything's like fucking this and fuck you and fuck that, and I was like, my people, we're home. our flight was delayed by 6 hours because of a mechanical issue. And so,
hey, and you know what I say every time? I go, take your time.
Is this what I say?
Yeah.
I was
take
like, look,
your time.
Like, it's fine. I don't need to get on this plane.
Fix it three times.
Yeah.
Double, triple check.
Yeah.
Take it for a spin.
Yeah,
go
take
around and back.
Yeah, you can fly to Pennsylvania and back and let me know how it goes.
Let me know how that goes. If no issues,
I'll
then I'm cool.
I'll get back on the plane. It's cool. Right. But man, you would not like, there's people, no, you got people from the Northeast and they're like, fuck this. This is fucked up. This is fucking stupid. You know, and like, it was going on. I was like, oh my gosh, what a culture clash.
Yeah.
You know, like, It's incredible. But, you know, one thing that I noticed that was the same everywhere is, like, you're driving around these places and there's, like, help wanted signs everywhere for workers. Workers, 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 workers. Mostly, like, you know, service industry job.
And they say, like, it's as easy, like, to apply, text, like, at Taco Bell, to apply, text jobs to this number.
Right.
And like, then you're fucking apply.
Yeah, sure. Right.
But yeah, you're right. Every business has this.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this one of our main topic today is it's not jiu-jitsu related. It's not really skateboarding related or, you know, underground related, but it does smack of like a punk rock ethos in that seeing here. And now look, we're going to look at both sides of this coin, guys, because we're not falling for one way or the other. I think you know, Pat will share his first perspective on this topic. My first one was like, yeah, fuck you. You know, everyone got sick of eating shit. And they quit. They're like, I'm not coming back to my job. They got unemployment during the pandemic. They got stimulus checks. So, like, I'm making more money at home so I can focus on me and do what I want to do versus working for the man.
Mm-hmm.
And so they stuck it to the fucking man. They don't want to make $7.25 an hour anymore.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And so I was like, good for them. Good for them. It does create a problem, however.
Yeah. 6 hour delay.
Yeah. Does create a problem.
Fuck.
Yeah. It is all fine and well, and it's armchair quarterbacking from the perspective is until it affects me. Like, I'm like, yeah, give them hell, man.
The thing is that from, like you were saying, from my perspective, how I was experiencing it was like was secondhand through Dominique, who is a manager of a business,
right,
that is having this issue where I definitely had a mentality of like, it seems like a generational thing of like, people don't want to work.
Yeah.
That they, because I'm actively seeing people not apply and not want to.
It's true, right. I understand what you're saying. And let me ask you this question. How do you define work?
I feel like doing shit you don't want to do that needs to be done.
And that's work for you. Okay.
In my opinion of like, I guess not in the traditional sense, but in my view of it, it's kind of like if you want to make money to do the things you like to do, you kind of have to do things that you don't want to do.
Sure.
You kind of have to grin and bear it.
Sure.
This is where I started.
Okay.
Was of seeing this like only from this perspective of seeing like, for lack of a better term, conservative parents, and not in the not in a political sense, but conservative. Like, in my day, we did this.
Sure.
In my day, I worked at a fucking McDonald's and I fucking hated it and it sucked. But it's kind of like paying your dues.
Sure.
But it's almost like, It without recognition of maybe those dues aren't necessary anymore. So I kind of feel like, oh, you don't have to deal with that shit. So it's bitterness projecting itself as me going, you don't want to work.
Right.
Because
you
don't want to work for them.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I hold a different perspective on work in general. And and it's evolved over time. I mean, I think I shared a lot of that. I have a work ethic that you know, I think I'm confident in saying like I like to work. I work a lot, but I look at everything as work. So, you know, I have my professional life where, you know, I work as a graphic designer, and, you know, when I'm not fucking off in the studio recording podcast episodes, drinking beers, you know, I'm working.
Yeah.
I look at jiu-jitsu as work. You know, I teach 5 mornings a week. It's stuff that I enjoy. I don't look at it as a job.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing is like, I guess I see what you're talking about, because like, if you like what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. That
right,
kind of
which
saying,
is bullshit. But yeah, I get you.
But
yeah.
I guess you're right. I guess I've always kind of thought of it in that more like in that term of saying I come at it with a work ethic, the same work ethic I do with the shit that I don't want to do.
Right.
And I kind of feel like work ethic kind of translates to how much shit can you take. You know what I mean? Like, how much can you handle, and how much can you endure to earn the most to do? So that way equals to you get to do more of what you want to do. Like, you got to earn it. I don't think you should just be able to do what you want because you want to do it.
Right.
And that's I guess a more explanation of mine. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. You didn't. No, it was fine. Let me ask you this then. Why do you have to suffer first?
Because that's my experience. That's only, I'm only going by my.
And I think that's where we are right now.
Right.
Like, and I think that there's like, I agree that, you know.
Oh, shit. Hey, did we just figure something out?
Yeah. This has happened twice now.
Yeah, we
in
did
five
it.
Episodes.
Holy fuck. I just learned how work ethic is earned or built.
Yeah,
or
how it's built.
Created.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting because I think a lot of the argument right now is about specifically regarding pay, like how much money you get paid
to do a job. A
living
wage, yes.
Living wages. And I think, though, that the actual argument is different than that. I think a living wage should be applied to all workers. I think people who work, you know, to do things, to live in our society, you should have a livable wage.
Yes.
Okay? It alleviates a gigantic burden on all kinds of issues, you know, starting with like welfare and so on and so forth, to create an environment and food, excuse me, more importantly, food insecurities for children.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Which is a big, big deal.
They didn't ask to be here, guys.
They did not. I think the majority of the issues are actually coming from something else, which is not feeling appreciated.
Yes.
There's no job satisfaction. So there's no way for you to say to yourself, this is worth me going back to this menial labor. And I don't care if they're offering $15 an hour now. Like, you guys have you guys shit where you eat, and it pisses me off.
Because it's the only way that I've ever known is if you want to make money, you kind of have to do stuff that you don't want to do. Not like hand jobs
at the Carla
Truck Stop. Not a prostitution, Jeffrey. Don't you dare. Okay. I ended that so many years ago. I haven't been to the rest stop. I haven't seen Rusty in years.
Okay? Sure.
Hi, Rusty. There's like a weird thing that I feel like, I guess it's just like, is having a switch, is being able to do stuff, like having that work ethic is like being able to not trick your mind, but convince your mind like this is something that it's not that hard to do. But I guess that's the thing, is like a lot of those service jobs, how I always envisioned it was like, it's really not that hard. It's pretty easy money considering what you have to deal with.
Sure.
If you go into it with the right mindset. And true. That's been the mindset of like, I've worked for bosses that I hate. I've endured so much shit because like I feel like the more shit I take, the more I appreciate the not shitty times when I do have a good job.
Sure.
Or when I do have fun, or when I do anything else like that, I'm not in that shitty place, but it makes that return to the shitty place that much shittier.
Right.
So what I do use as a motivator is using those corporations and using those shitty situations as a way to springboard yourself into doing your own thing. Like, that's the way of earning it. But
right.
I did it. I had tricks for myself. So I've worked in those shitty service jobs.
Sure. Yeah.
All throughout like my life. Kitchen jobs, like straight up dealing with you fucking dickhead public. You know, like how many like people treated me like shit just because I had a name tag on?
Sure, yeah.
That, like, you would never talk to any other stranger. You would never talk to me like this if I wasn't wearing this name tag. You understand? Like, there's so many situations where like I wanted to kind of threaten somebody, but also be like, just give them perspective of like, I'm just a human being.
Right.
But every single password I had for my jobs like those, I had comedy in the password. So anytime I signed in to work or anytime I clocked in,
it was a reminder
of why are you here?
Right.
That's why. And again, that is just my own personal experience, but I feel like I don't think that's wrong. I want good service at a fast food place. So if I'm going to work at a fast food place, I'm going to try to do a good job, because otherwise I'm working at a shitty job and I'm doing a shitty job at it.
It's right. Well, I mean, it really becomes an issue of leadership. So when you have somebody that you really admire as somebody that's in charge, whether it's a manager or a boss, is that, or somebody in leadership, and they appreciate where you are at right now and what you're doing for them and for whatever goal you're working towards, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because you eat a lot more shit willingly with the understanding that they understand and they're there with you.
Yeah.
Then it feels different, like you're in this together, right? It's just a bit more optimistic. But I think, generally speaking, the people who are in charge of most things just suck at leadership. They suck at being a boss. Nobody wants to tell them that, you know. Mm-hmm. And most of it's starting in middle management and moving its way up. They just suck at it. They're terrible at managing people. They're terrible at their jobs. And shit rolls downhill, man. It's just the way it goes. And it ends up in the laps of the people that have to do this work for a very small amount of money. They feel unappreciated. And they're mad as hell. And they're not going to take it anymore.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like that's essentially where we're at now. There are so many elements to it. It's not just as cut and dry as people don't want to work. It's the fact of like how much is this company really offering? But they do want to work.
Yeah, I think they do want to work.
Everybody now is not voting necessarily just with their dollar. They're not voting with their actual vote casted in an election. They're voting with their time.
Right.
They're saying, how much time do I want to devote to Taco Bell when I make some pretty good fucking tacos myself?
That's right.
And maybe I'll go and try to sell my tacos at a food truck,
right,
or do something else. And if those opportunities, but it's like, why did it take until now? Like, why did it take until like right now? Is it a breaking point, or is it literally, do you think it's like a generational thing?
No, I think that what we showed as an opportunity, like I think it's true to say that in our lifetimes, all of us, we've seen more than enough wealth to house the homeless, feed the hungry, cure the sick, and yet we don't do those things. Like, it's true to say that the wealth is available, right?
Yeah.
And not because I believe in socialism or
no,
anything
no,
like
no,
that.
No, no, I it's like just it's statistically there is right. that much wealth right. owned right. by a single person that could do this much.
Correct. Yeah, right, yeah. right. I think it's possible that if we didn't waste so much time doing, you know, stupid shit that yeah. we would be able to get more things done. But that being said, I think that what we did is because of the pandemic, there was an opportunity for people who were living at that either under the poverty line or right at the poverty line to see that, like, oh shit, there is, like, I mean, I've got unemployment, I've got a stimulus check coming, you know, once every quarter, and lo and behold, I can live better. I didn't say good. Live better than what I was when I was working 40 plus hours a week,
right.
or working two jobs. You know, at shitty minimum wage, and you know, I think that's a big wake up call.
Like, you know? I was working one day a week at a corporation job, like at a corporate sure. place. Like, and it's not that I was being treated poorly at that job, because the job that I worked at, considering most service industry jobs, was like yeah. the fucking creme de la creme. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. you get treated like a human being. But there's still the matter of you're still a number. Like, it's still, you're still just a cog in the wheel.
Sure.
And there's not, and it's not that you don't matter. It's just the fact that, like, it seems more like a slogan than an actual, like, fucking message.
Sure.
Like, there's like, here's, well, that's here's just the it, talking though. Points. Like,
and that's just it. You're exactly right. I mean, you're in service of another, of some sort of corporate ideal, some sort of branding strategy that was built by, you know, a guy like me for, right. on behalf of that organization and now, or that company. And now you, as an individual, because you just took the job because you want the pay, the benefits, or the hours, or whatever it is, right. or whatever combination of things is, because you are on your path to be doing something else.
Right.
This is a waypoint for that. Instead, I tell you that you need to believe in this, in the branding statement
buy
that I
in.
Created.
Yeah,
you need to buy
in completely, but, like, you're not going to share from any yeah. of that success,
that's
really.
Exactly. It's yeah. exactly what my point is. Right, and so right. you say to yourself, like, look, you know, you're on the interview and you want the job, so of course you're going to, like, say, yeah, of course I believe in this. I think it's wonderful. It's great. And I think in theory it is good. Like, these ideas that are created by these, you know, by these companies is the right way to think about it.
Yes.
But it's an impractical the way
Show.
They yeah,
don't
exactly,
tell.
Exactly.
That's the thing. If you're going
to
fucking
so
care.
So back to leadership.
Care, right.
Back to leadership. This yeah. is exactly what I'm saying. So show it instead of just saying it. It makes a big difference.
Yes.
And with that is you'll see that like I think in that realm, if we're able to do that more often, we can see that like, even if there's somebody that's ahead of me in the terms of the fiscal scale of things, so you are you make more money than I do, right? But you can show me that you've been where I've been before,
right?
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that not only does that give me inspiration for to continue moving forward with,
but
what
I'm
going to
listen
done.
To what you say because,
yeah, because
I
you
believe
appreciate, you,
you
believe
know
me.
What I'm talking about.
Exactly,
like, you know my
right.
experience.
You relate, yeah. right? You relate because I think the same thing could be said for you know, look, like if we look at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and we have the belt ranking system, and again, we, you know, we've talked about this before, but anybody listening to the podcast that doesn't understand the belt ranking system of Jiu-Jitsu, there aren't a lot of belts in the adult system.
Right.
You know, we have white, blue, purple, brown, and black. There's right. only five belts. And it takes about an average of 10 years or so to get your black belt if you train consistently, consistently. You know, it takes about 10 years to get your black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's not to say that there aren't people that are like white and blue belts who aren't like extraordinarily talented and could smash the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you just give them a black belt, that thing's not going to be respected because
right.
they didn't put their time in. It didn't come from a position where then they're a black belt now and they're looking at a white belt. No, you can't appreciate what it was like to go from white to black.
Right.
Because you went directly from blue belt to
right.
black belt.
Right, right.
Like, that's not, you know, yeah, you don't understand, right?
You haven't been there. You haven't been through
exactly
the same experiences, or even, like, you can't even say, you can't relate.
You can't relate
whatsoever.
That's
you
right.
know what I mean?
That's right. And that's why it's impossible for people who have been through, you know, extraordinarily traumatic situations to talk to people about that experience when they themselves haven't been, or when the person they're talking to hasn't been through the same thing or
right.
something similar.
Right.
And it's not to say that they shouldn't. I think they should. I think we should start talking about these things more openly. And your cat's like really a fucking distraction.
I can take care of him.
I know. You can. He's like, he's being all cute.
I know. It's like you're talking the whole time. I'm like, as soon as I get to talk and I can go to the camera, I'm going to bring this hand up with the thing. And I'm just going to. He's going to knock that camera over.
Like, right, we're going to pee all over our ass, man, with your behavior of your cat. But you understand what I'm saying. Like, yeah. it becomes this whole other thing. You know, that's just based on relationship building.
The severed relationship between the employer and the employee, and I'm not talking about the manager of the personal business or the actual business, or even the regional manager,
sure,
or the district manager or anything, but it's just the fact that there's that many people between who actually can make a fucking change in the business,
right,
and who actually is asking for a change in the business. There's so many people in between.
So many people in between. I think we found our clip for this week.
I know.
Stanley, come on, buddy.
He's like staring at me in the eyes.
You're gonna get kicked off YouTube, bro.
Stanley's like...
They said it was going to take 2 weeks for all the testosterone to leave his body. I know. It's been a while.
He's like staring me in the eyes like that.
What's up, bro? You want to rub my belly again?
It's making me uncomfortable.
It's the penis flytrap. That's one of my new jujitsu moves.
I love it.
But there's so many people in between that there is no relationship between,
sure,
the person that's going like,
right,
you're not showing. And I got to tell you, I think there's also a fair amount of gaslighting there where they're just like,
always,
where there's people are saying, we need a living wage, at least a living wage. And people are like, pay fast food people $15 an hour. Couple months later, pandemic hits and they're like, you're essential. And then,
right,
and
right,
then a couple then a couple months later, they're like, we'll give you $15 an hour. We'll give you $15 an hour. Nah, thanks. You know, for that much time of having working, I'm sure, 40 to 60 hour weeks,
yeah,
getting overtime, getting all that money, and not having literally anything to spend it on. They,
sure,
can't do anything.
Right.
They're like, oh, I can invest this in myself. I'm going to buy some nice cameras. I'm going to start making those makeup tutorials. I'm going to get some sponsorships. And guess what? Minimum wage.
No, it's true. And I'm going to say this, man. Like, and I think it needs to be said. And that is I believe that there are a lot of small businesses, a lot of franchisees and the like, who say legitimately, I can't afford to pay my employees that much money.
Yes.
And I believe you.
Right.
I believe you. But I also think that if that's the case, then you probably don't need employees at all.
Yeah.
You just need to spend more time in the office working.
Yeah.
Or at the restaurant working.
Because those are the blue belts that got their black belts right,
yeah,
you know, too early.
They did. Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's who those people are.
I'm not saying you do suck at business. I'm just asking the question. Is it because you suck at business,
right,
that you can't afford to pay your employees a livable wage, right? Also, you know, when the pandemic kicked off, for instance, and like there was all these restaurants that were like, oh, you know, we're only allowed like 50% capacity. You know, how are we going to make it? I'm like, motherfucker, I've been in your restaurant. It has never been 100% full. In fact, I've never seen it at 50% capacity. So don't give me that shit. Like,
right.
You know,
yeah, this was a problem before.
Yeah, right. It's exactly. That's what my point is.
Yeah.
Right,
all of this
is
was.
All of it, yes, was.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. It's exactly true. You know, this has been a problem beforehand.
And the fact that I can see it so fucking clearly is a red flag
for
America,
for all of you.
Jesus.
And I think too, it's important to say this is that I guarantee you there are plenty of people that actually don't want to work.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
There's plenty of people that don't want to work at all, you know, and we know those people.
I absolutely know that there are people out there that are scamming and making it by that are that level of it.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I think this, and I think you're saying the same thing, what we're viewing now, all these $15 an hour,
sure,
signs that we see, all these fucking things are too little too late. And we saw this coming.
Yeah.
But this is not because of just those people.
Yeah, yeah,
this
it's
is not.
Not.
Just,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
those people.
So you're just going to scam the system? Like,
yeah.
No. These are people that are working the system.
No.
Just like a lot of people in.
Like everybody else is doing it. Right,
in the world.
Right. And I'm telling you, like the people that scam the system, that is their job. That's what they do for a living.
Right.
And they're fucking good at it.
Yeah.
You know, and you could see it, and they know you could see it, but they don't give a shit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, that's the point of that, of a con artist, is the fact that they just do it right in front of you and basically tell you they're doing it.
But it's like now, when I tell you I'm going to armbar you,
yeah,
and you don't believe me.
Yes. Yeah, you, at that point, you're a jiu-jitsu con artist. You motherfucker. Run my damn arm!
So,
yeah.
Anyway, man, that's like, you know, it was just a, it was an interesting thing to talk about for today. I mean, it's not like we're not coming up with any solutions. I just think it's interesting to think about or talk about, like, why we're in this boat. And I wish we did have like a legitimate solution to this, but oh, you got it now, man. You had it. You got sprayed.
I had to blast him.
You had to get blasted.
He likes it.
I'm sure
it's really
does.
Weird, actually. He goes over and then he just starts licking the spot that I got. He's just like, yeah,
I love it.
This is fucking awesome.
I love when I'm wet.
Yeah. But yeah,
not a dig. But at any rate, I wish there was like some sort of like global, you know, solution for these types of problems. But there just isn't, man.
There isn't. No, and it is. If anything, the fact that I've turned my view around on it, the fact that I see it now as kind of these are just people that are like. Are kind of, like you said, fed up. They're just not gonna take it anymore, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this to all, like, to all the business owners that are here now, and you have these employees that are still continuing to work, and is just take a note from what's happened already and don't abuse them.
Right.
Pay them well, help them out. Like, they'll stay, you know, they'll stay and help you. But if you keep doing the same shit that ended up in this spot, because here's the thing about leadership, man. And again, like, fuck, I'm doing it again. I'm quoting Jocko, right? Or like, you know, Jocko's.
He's a big fan. He's reached out.
He has reached out.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that like, if you're in leadership, it's your responsibility.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Like, so if your employees all fucking left, it's your fucking fault.
Right.
You're the one.
You're in charge.
You're in charge. That's right. Right. And if the buck stops with you, because it always does, like, it's, you know, these guys and gals run around talking about, like, talking their big game. And then once the shit hits the fan, it's everybody else's fault. That's not leadership.
Yeah.
That's excuse making, right?
Yeah.
And that makes you a weak leader. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
So take this opportunity to reassess, reinvent, and refigure out like how you're going to navigate these waters. You'll be just fine.
It's not a word, but I'm creating it right now. Responsibilize yourself.
Responsibilize yourself.
Responsibilize yourself to the situation and fix it. Okay?
It was a hot August afternoon.
I love your narration.
It was a hot August afternoon when Pat came up with a new word for America.
Jeff.
Yes, sir.
I have a question for you.
Sure. Hit me.
What's on your turntable?
Oh, what's on my turntable? Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you a fan?
No, I am a human being.
Are you a fan of soul music?
Yeah, I am. Okay.
You like soul music? I love soul music.
Okay.
I love it. It is like, I don't know, there's something about it that just like, I don't know, it trips my trigger. Right. It is a root sound. It is like, it's extremely powerful. And I'm sure that everybody can figure out like one, like, you know, soul artist that they really like. Whether it's like Marvin Gaye or if it was like Aretha Franklin or, you know. But I got to talking with my son while we were on vacation because now a lot of soul music is considered like oldies music. So you can hear it, you know, at the grocery store or when you're standing in line at Disneyland or Disney World, excuse me. And Otis Redding was on. So what's on my turntable right now is everything in my Otis Redding collection.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
Just listening to Otis. Otis died when he was 28 years old. Okay. He died in a plane crash, tragically. The last song that he wrote was Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. And what's amazing about this song is it's not a traditional soul song, but it's a folk song, and he wrote it because he was starting to spread his wings out into his like songwriting capabilities. And I just think that for the legacy that was left behind at such a young age, that Otis Redding is this, like, he was just this beautiful human being. And if you just don't actually take the opportunity, so next time you hear something, like if you're listening to Sitting on the Dock of the Bay,
mm-hmm.
like really listen to it. I'm grateful for Otis Redding. I'm grateful for what he's left behind for us to listen to and appreciate. But man, I tell you what, speaking of live, you were talking in the last podcast how much you like live records. Like, listen to Otis Redding play like live, where he sings, you know, Try a Little Tenderness. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Anyway, so what's on your turntable there, Chief?
What, my turntable, though?
Yeah, what's on your turntable?
It's a little three-piece from Australia known as The Living End.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Living End.
Oh, The Living End is a band that, is, to me, still such a unique and incredibly talented, underappreciated band that if I can ever sing a band's praises more. And I have such nice memories tied to this band.
Yeah, I do too.
The first time I ever got to hear their full-length self-titled album, which is not the thing I'm currently referencing on my turntable, but I do highly recommend. It's The Living End, just self-titled. Start to finish is one of the only way I can put it is I love to say it is a perfect album.
Wow.
It's like a story. It's incredible. His guitar playing is incredible. It's just great. But
yeah.
We were driving to Orlando to see Bad Religion at the House of Blues.
Okay.
And we had one of those CD players the disc man that would tune the radio to
sure.
So, cuz we didn't have a CD player in the van.
Yep.
Mom's van that we all piled into.
Right.
And my brother was driving, my oldest brother, and then all their friends, my other brother, everybody, all of us were in this van. And this was probably like my fifth show.
So this was this was pre-COVID days when everybody crammed into a van.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then to cap that night off with, and then I'm going to go see
Bad Religion
live. My still top five all-time favorite bands of all time.
Me too, man.
I love Bad Religion.
I agree.
I respect them immensely.
Yeah.
They're my favorite band's favorite band.
Right.
So, I don't know how I can't respect that.
You know, as a result of this conversation, I can almost guarantee you that next week's What's on the Turntable will be
Bad
Religion.
For both of us.
Yeah, yeah.
21st Century Digital Boys. But the song is, I believe it's Carry Me Home. Mm-hmm. That's the name of it. Yeah, Carry Me Home by The Living End. Has been on repeat for me because the self-titled is, to me, has been Living End. That's been their catalog to me my whole life because I'm like, what else do you need?
Right.
I know that they made other albums, and I come up on, you know, if I have a shuffle on or something, sure. But that song, Carry Me Home, it rips. It gives you goosebumps. Like, if you like heavy music at all, and I'm talking any genre, punk rock, metal, like if you like fucking Nickelback, I don't give a shit what you listen to, you will appreciate this song in some way or another.
I will care. I do care if you listen to Nickelback.
This is you know what? I've stopped my Nickelback hate. I do judge you. I will say, but I don't hate you. But yeah, that's what's been on my turntable.
It was then when Pat realized he don't need no one to tell him what to do.
This has to be a thing going on. this is how we get into other segments. I go chapter 3. I guess if we're going to get into the next chapter, the next chapter should be Ask a Black Belt. HGH user himself, Luke Weaver, sent in a question. He said, ask a black belt question. You murder someone for calling you a poser, even though you skate. and the state of Pennsylvania sentences you to death.
Yeah.
What is your last meal before the electric chair, and why is it Kyle's mom's ass? I told him, oh, great, another serious one. I wish we would get some jokes. Okay, but yeah, what's your last meal?
What's my last meal? Okay, so I've murdered somebody.
They deserved it. You're like
they deserve it. They called me a poser, so they're dead.
But you do skate.
I do skate.
Them pictures and video on the internet.
It matters not whether or not I skate or not because they're dead.
Right.
And what they did find out is that I'm a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. before they died.
Right. Yeah. Did you whisper it in their ear before you finished them, or did you just like actually pull it out and go?
It was then when Mark realized Jeff was a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Anyway. All right. So, okay, my last meal. Oh, man, that is a really great question. I'll have to think about this one. Okay. I don't know what the protocol is for, like, last meals, by the way, in, like, prison terms.
I think you're given a budget. I honestly don't know. I can actually look that up while you're doing it.
But okay, well, I mean, it's irrelevant. We'll just put this in, like, the ethereal catalog, right? Okay, and I know this is going to sound cheesy, but here's what my last meal would look like. I want my wife's spaghetti, okay, the spaghetti that she makes specifically. I want to eat a plate. I want to eat a gigantic plate of it because that's what I normally eat.
Yeah.
I want a 6-pack of Old Milwaukee.
Okay.
And I want a pack of Camel Lights.
Dude, I think you can do that, actually. So it looks like for most states, some states place tight restrictions. In Florida, where you just were, if you killed somebody if you were surfing and somebody's like, you fucking poser, and you're like, what?
Yeah, but not in case board. I would have felt like that was legit. But
or
anyway,
at the Space Center and you threw him off the space station.
What'd you say about America? America!
It's last meal must be purchased locally, so you're good there.
Okay.
And the cost is limited to $40.
Okay.
So you're like,
I'm gold.
Dude, you're not even there at all.
Like, I get a 30-pack of Old Milwaukee.
You give your wife a tip. You know what I'm saying? Not just the tip. You know what I'm saying? Do you get a last visit?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Probably not, right? You probably don't.
I don't know that. I don't know that I'd be like in the mood, though.
I would ask if I could exchange my last meal for pussy. Can I just eat my wife's ass one last time? Like, you know, something like that. Like, instead of Kyle's mom's ass.
Yeah, right.
Your wife's spaghetti. How much?
Had a 6-pack of Old Milwaukee.
Just six.
Yeah, just a 6-pack of Old Milwaukee.
And then Camel Lights.
And a pack of Camel Lights.
Would you intermediate? Like,
No. That's disgusting. I used to work at a shitty like distributor, or a warehouse. Uh-huh. It was for Ross. You know, Dress for Less.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Very familiar.
Third floor packing is where I worked, and honestly, like in the lunch break room, there was the smoking section and the non smoking section, and man, there's nothing more disgusting than watching people smoke as many cigarettes as they can while they eat. And I was a smoker at the time, so I was like, ugh, Jesus Christ, no, I won't like enter. I won't be like smoking.
You want to know how I was first deterred of that same and for the same exact reason of like it
How's
just
that?
Looks so unappetizing to me was Groundhog Day. When he was eating it.
Oh, yeah. And he's just like, because he doesn't care about his health anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that part, I was like, I don't think I ever want to smoke and eat. I'll still smoke and I'll still eat. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But never at the same time.
The cigarette of itself looked good, and so did the donut, but.
Together?
Together? No.
No. That is not two tastes that taste straight together. But a more serious one,
like we like to do
here on the 6 a.m. podcast for Ask a Black Belt, Michael Brisbane has asked. Popular sentiment on BJJ's social media pages is that wrist locks and pulling guard are frowned upon.
Yeah.
What is your position on these controversial moves?
Okay, and this is like a legit position on this, is that I will pull guard on your ass and then wrist lock you.
Yeah.
So.
Don't get pulled guard upon and don't get wrist locked upon.
You know, what I think is interesting is that we practice the 6 a.m. class in particular. And with all due respect for a lot of other gyms that aren't able to do a lot of the takedown stuff. Like usually we're fortunate, like a lot of our evening classes, for instance, are very, very packed with people. We'll have a tremendous amount of students in the classroom. They're in the class, but there just isn't enough room for
taking them to school.
Yeah, take them to school. You can't do takedowns. It's just too dangerous. There's not enough room for it. At 6 o'clock at the 6 a.m. class, we start our first two matches are from our feet. It's really important because every match in competition, for instance, starts on your feet for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And honestly, like you know, if you got into an altercation. Out on the street, you're going to be on your feet. And we have a judo program.
Yeah.
And we also have, and have had in the past, wrestling coaches who understand, you know, freestyle, Greco, and the whole works in wrestling. We do wrestling takedowns. So we do understand the takedown game. However, like, pulling guard is a significant part of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and knowing how to pull guard and how to use that to your advantage is a skill set like anything else. And the only reason that people complain about it is because it's very frustrating when you want to take somebody down and they pull guard and they fuck your shit up.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. The same thing goes with, like, wrist locks, or there's a couple of other taboo submissions, and the reason that they're taboo is because people fucking hate getting stuck in them.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that'll be it for this episode. So, you know, here's my advice. Don't shit where you eat.